Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we're continuing our research of spring camps across the country, and today I've brought on Josh Chevalier from the CFF Fantasy Points team to help discuss what we've been able to find across the country. From springtime injuries to potential starters in key CFF spots, we'll help you keep ahead of your competition during this period of time. We've got all that and more coming right after this.
Chinty go, breaks a tackle, he's 10, he's touchdown! Cook's gonna throw the deep ball, and Burton cut the defense, touchdown Luther Burton!
Milroe gonna run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milroe, goodbye, touchdown Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off-season, 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com, subscribe there with one of our sensational tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devy, C2C, IDP, and really betting needs as well. We got everything you need over there. We got rankings, we got articles, we got tools, and so much more than that, including the CFF, Devy, and C2C draft predictor tool that I will never, ever shut up about, because guys, I'm proud of that tool we got over there. Again, for those of you who've been asking, though, we will have our CFF rankings up by the end of the month. So just, again, making that very clear to everybody, we will have those up as soon as possible for you guys. Just got a few more things we got to figure out there. Speaking of ways to reach out to me, if you ever have any questions like that, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared, and the show is at Chasing the Natty. And the handsome fellow in the Fantasy Points hat with the football helmets behind him is Mr. Josh Chevalier at CFF Guys on Twitter. Josh, how you doing, man?
Doing well, man. I'm excited to be on the show today and just kick it with you and talk a little spring camp news.
Yeah, last time my listeners heard from you is during the way too early mock draft special we had back there in February. You came on. Appreciate you coming on for that. For those of you who may not have been keeping up with you, Josh, or just the CFF industry in general, and maybe this is the only way, this podcast might be the only way that they really kind of hear about what's going on in the CFF industry, you've got some pretty cool announcements that and some stuff you've been putting together over the last couple of months. So why don't you go ahead and take some time to tell everybody what it is you guys are doing over there at Fantasy Points.
Yeah, we we are starting a new college football subscription package that's going to be really based on DFS betting, some CFF stuff as well. And so we started a CFF podcast over there at Fantasy Points, and we're just trying to follow in your footsteps, Jared. You've been doing this for a while, and we have been really impressed by what you've done, what the Burning the Redshirt guys, G5 Hive coming up, all the different podcasts that we have. But you're the one that's really been the one that's been weekly and consistent over a several year period. And so a couple of us, Mike Bainbridge, myself, Zach Hall, and Eric Froton, we were like, hey, like, we want to continue to help grow this space the way that you have. And so we wanted to throw out another podcast that people can consume information, and we're calling it CFF All Access. And we're really excited about that venture, and we'll see where it goes. And you know better than me, the weekly grind can be tough, but we want to help grow this space and be another voice out there like you, man.
I mean, the cast you guys put together over there with yourself, Eric Froton, Mike Bainbridge, and Zach Hall. And many people probably don't know Zach Hall. He's at CFF Champs. Like, that dude is incredibly smart. If y'all want to hear more from him, one, go check out, obviously, CFF All Access on the Fantasy Points podcast feed. But also, I did a live mock draft with him. If you go onto my YouTube page, and if you look at our list of live shows, I believe it has an orange thumbnail. It was last summer. I brought on Zach during his period where he was starting to get back into the CFF space. Dude is so incredibly smart. And you got to be able, like, again, I believe he's like heavily underfollowed on Twitter. I think he's like yeah. criminally underfollowed. So go check him out at CFF Champs. Go pick his brain. He's a very nice guy, super smart. And of course, again, like I said, Eric Froton, Mike Bainbridge yourself, like super smart group over there. It's super weird hearing you say that you're following in my footsteps when literally I was the one following in y'all's footsteps when I first got into this space like 2 to 3 years ago. So I am both proud and humbled at the same time hearing you say that, Josh.
Yeah, man.
But again, great stuff over there. Go check out their stuff at Fantasy Points. You guys are releasing your own CFF guide this year as well, I have heard as well. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it'll be a guide like what you guys have, but we'll be releasing some content that has, you know, like a top rankings, right, and some profiles, you know, some top freshmen, things like that. Kind of a collection, right, of sorts of information that you would hear on a podcast and put that all into a space. But, you know, you guys do such a great job, you guys, and the you know, other people that put out guides of doing the PDF and the graphics and all that. And that takes a lot of work. And I don't think we're there yet. And so we're just going to try to bite off what we can chew and not more than what we can chew. And so yeah, we'll have a little bit out there. That'll be some free information for everyone.
Awesome. Awesome. Again, anything coming from you, Eric, Mike, and Zach is going to be absolutely fire. Can't wait to see what you guys put together. And again, y'all's podcast is every Thursday, I believe. It's going to be a weekly podcast. So go check out, make sure you subscribe to Fantasy Points and their podcast feed so you can hear those guys every week. And again, you can listen to us on Monday, listen to Josh and them on Thursday. No problem there whatsoever. CFF all week long. Alrighty. Josh, we got a great show ahead. We got a ton of spring news. It's pretty much the only thing we're going to be talking about today because there's a lot of different teams that we are starting to get news out of. Scrimmages are getting started. We don't have much scrimmage news today. That's probably going to be starting next week. I would imagine we'll get a lot of that news, but pretty much every camp across the country has gotten started. So we've gotten news out of a ton of teams. We boiled it down to just 10 teams we'll be talking about here today. Again, we'll be talking like Notre Dame. We'll be talking Texas. We'll be talking a little bit of Arizona State, South Carolina, and a couple of G5 teams at the end. We got some UAB talk. We talked about them a couple of times, but there is some news there. San Jose State, which we haven't done a ton of. Utah State, lots of great teams we'll be discussing here today. But Josh, before we get into that, I want to pick your brain because, again, like I mentioned, my people have not heard from you since February. You, like me, have gone into CFF drafts, and I don't know about you, Josh, but like I go into CFF draft season, I have my kind of initial rankings. But it's like once I'm actually in those drafts, it feels like that's when things start to change. When you're put on the spot, you really kind of start get pushed on how you feel about certain guys, what strategies you thought you were going to like. Maybe you kind of shift. I'll pick your brain here. What have you kind of noticed about yourself maybe that has maybe shifted since our since we started back in February? Things have or different outlooks you have on the CFF player pool maybe or just strategies in general this year. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the first one, I mean, I picked at 1.3, I picked Caden Salter. And almost immediately after that, I had instant regret and I wish I would have picked Tetaroa McMillan at 1.3. And that's just for me, like early on, like I want to pick running backs or wide receivers early and then wait on QBs. And it wasn't until we got into that draft that I realized, oh, shoot, like there's like three or four at the top. Right. And after McLeod, it's a drop, right? There's really the top three and then McLeod will be sprinkled in there, second, third round, maybe. Yeah. And then it drops. And even like a Haynes King, who I think was going early there, is now going later based on the more information that people have brought up, right, about scheduling and difficulty and all that. And so, yeah, that's one piece. I mean, a big thing for me, right, is I'm just waiting on QBs. So I'm just stacking up wide receivers and running backs. And also early on, I picked Easton Messer, right, in the fourth round. And that's a guy that now, you know, with the OC change since that draft, like I'm waiting on that. And then in general, I felt like back then I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do at wide receiver. And now I'm just like, you know, there's just more information and more data and we've looked into it more and I feel a lot better about my wide receiver strategies and now than I did then. So I feel like it's definitely come more together of like, man, I'm punting QBs and I'm just loading up on, you know, QB, wide receivers and running backs as much as I can in those first 10 rounds. And so it feels because that's a good way to go.
How far do you punt QBs, right? So, like, for me, punting QBs is, like, once the seventh round comes around, I am, like, almost like a hybrid, like, punt QB where, like, I don't take a quarterback usually in the first couple rounds. Now, granted, there's some guys that come up like this. I got Byron Brown in the second round in a draft recently. I'm like, yeah, that's no brainer. I'm going to take him when he gets to the second round. But usually, like, seventh through 10th round, it's a strategy I used last year, and it's working out well for me again this year in terms of guys that I like. I'll just hit like four QBs in that range, like pretty quick, like in pretty quick succession. Like four out of my next five picks after the seventh round will probably be QBs of some kind, and then I don't take like two QBs until like the end of the draft. Versus, like, I know Mike Bainbridge, and you guys discussed this on your pod last week, he did a draft where he didn't take a quarterback until like the 25th round. So, like, are you that extreme, or are you like more like me, or are you kind of somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, no, I'm not that extreme at all. And so I'm with you, right? I think so. If a guy like Nico, he's getting drafted higher and higher now, like the fifth round or so. Or A.V. Johnson, he'll go like the sixth round now. If they drop to the seventh round, then I'll take a shot on those guys. Garrett Green, he's another one that if he falls, but I'm not getting those guys at price at all. But if they fall, I'll take a shot on them. If not, then I'm going like 8, 9, 10, 11, kind of like you. Like I'll just load up on three or four QB. There's a bunch of them in that range that I like them in that range, like a Brady Cook, a Chandler Morris, you know, those type of guys, even a Joey Aguilar, Miller Moss, I've seen fall in that range. If those guys are falling there, then I'll just keep going there until I'm satisfied, because I feel so good about my running backs and wide receivers up top.
What I like about the second tier quarterbacks is, like, outside of, again, like Salter, Brown, Gabriel, McLeod, those are kind of usually the first four quarterbacks off the board. There's not a set order after that point. So you can have guys like Garrett Green, like, yeah, one draft he'll go in like the fourth round, but the next draft, there's a decent chance he could fall into like the seventh round, right?
Yep.
And so you can actually kind of play that game a little bit of like, all right, let's see where, like, there's never going to be a guy in that second tier where you're like, oh, I'm never going to get him. He's always going to go in that range. Like, no, some of these guys fall to pretty decent values. I mean, shoot, Jackson Arnold is a guy that's kind of fallen a little bit right now. He's a top 12 quarterback in ADP last month. Now down to QB 18, you're talking about a guy that was going in like the fifth, sixth round a month ago, now suddenly starts falling into the seventh, eighth, ninth round in a lot of drafts.
Yep.
Like, shoot, I'll take that discount. Let's do this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's a bunch of value, like you said. So I love doing that, man. I think it's just like, yeah, why not wait on him when Haynes King, right, who's the guy that's usually getting drafted a lot higher, or Nico or Avery Johnson, which I love those guys, don't get me wrong. But, like, they're new starters, right? Like, we just don't know exactly what they're going to do. They could explode, but they could also bust. So, and then Haynes King obviously has the issues that we've talked about ad nauseum. So,
yeah, with the schedule and everything. One last question I'll pick your brain on, Josh, before we get into this. I have a theme of the known knowns, the known unknowns. But again, we'll get into a point at some point in the season where we start looking at unknown unknowns, which are the things that, like, that are under discussed, the things that we didn't really know, the questions we didn't know we need to be asking. At this point in the season, Josh, what do you think is being under discussed right now? What do you think will become one of those unknown unknowns later on in the season?
Well, I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly, but I think one of the things that always goes under discussed or undervalued is just position battles, right? And especially in these, like, best balls, we'll get into it later, but there's position battles where you can get one guy kind of later than you normally should get him, and then a guy that way late. And it's like, man, if you just grab both of them, you're going to get somebody that's a rock star. And especially in best balls, I don't understand why there's a discount on some of these guys, because you are going to draft both of them, and then you're going to have them, and you'll have a lock at that. And so I think routinely the guys that end up being successful in best balls and in redraft are the guys that find these values, and they play on the position battle, whether it's like years ago. It was Will Rogers. Last year was Byron Brown, right? Where people thought Jerry Bohannon's going to the, you know, press conference, right?
That was so weird last year.
It was, but you know, all of us would be like, if Byron Brown was the for sure starter, he would have gone 10 rounds earlier.
Very true.
And I think that's where we know the system's good. Why not take that risk? Even if you're, you know, I don't know. It's those type of guys that end up winning you leagues. I guarantee you the guys that had Byron Brown did at least decent. Same thing with Ashton Jeanty. I mean, he was another one last year. And George Halani. Pick both. I started picking both of them in the 9th and 10th round because I'm like,
why not?
Like, who knows? But like, once one of them got hurt, the other one went off. And that's another thing that happens a lot in those type of scenarios.
No, I think it's a great point. And like, I have started discounting CJ Baxter just slightly because, again, I believe in him. But like, if I grab him in the 3rd round, you know who the next player I add into my queue is? Jadon Blue. And I don't plan on taking him, but I keep him in my queue there so that at one point I can say, like, alrighty, I got CJ Baxter. Jadon Blue's going like 20 rounds later, unless you're drafting with Ryan Carpenter, who takes him in like the 9th round for some reason. But he's going like 20 rounds later normally. Just have him there. Make sure you grab him later just to kind of lock in that position. Like, if you're wrong on CJ Baxter, if you think you're a little, like, if you're a little woozy on like whether he'll be the guy or not, just grab both of them. Why not? Like, it's a 30 round best ball.
Exactly. And one of those guys gets hurt and oh my gosh.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
The value skyrockets. So that's a really good.
All righty. Let's get into the main segment here. Let's go ahead and talk about some spring news. Enough picking your brain here. I'll pick your brain on some specific teams here, Josh.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. First couple of announcements. Again, very quickly, I promise. 30 seconds or less for all of you out there. The freshman guide over at campusagain.com. If you're in a CFF Dynasty League or a C2C League of any kind, it is the go-to place. It is where I start my freshman research every single year, is learning these guys who've been watching these players in high school, breaking down their film, breaking down their strengths and weaknesses. Guys, I know my strengths and weaknesses, and evaluating freshmen is not one of them. I absolutely go over to these guys over at campusagain.com and look at their freshman guide. Again, it's where I start every single year. And from there, I can do my own research once I get to know the player pool really well. Perfect place to start. Go check it out. Other one here, again, make sure you go check out the latest episode of Defending the Natty with myself and Nate Marquise, our monthly CFF Dynasty podcast. This past show, we ended up talking about some off-season trading that we did early on in the season, and I made my initial CFF Dynasty rankings, and so we kind of broke those down, and again, Nate had some disagreements with me on certain guys, and we had a lot of great discussions, so absolutely go check that out if you have not already. That absolutely was not
Jared,
30 seconds.
Jared,
yo,
can I interrupt you for a second? I just want to brag on both of those things. One, defending the Natty. Look, Nate is incredible at Dynasty. Jared, you have stepped on the scene and done really well. You beat me in a championship last year in the Blue Bloods League. Like, this is, again, this stuff isn't out here. Like, you've been a trailblazer in these things. And Dynasty's, to me, it's the most fun of all the different formats that I play. And you guys starting this show is incredible. So I really appreciate y'all doing this. And two, like, if you want to be good in your C2C leagues, like, you have to pick up that freshman guide, because that's how people are setting value. Like, this guide sets the value. And whether you agree or disagree with where they have certain players, like, you need to, like, in order to understand where people are being drafted and why they're being drafted there, you need to get this guide, because it's setting the market for these leagues. And so, yeah, if you're going to be competitive, if you're going to find value, like, you need to do it off of this guide. Again, whether you agree or disagree with these, you have to be consuming it. So anyways, sorry, I just want to say those two things, good, because I think those are really big things that I've seen with this. And so I appreciate you guys putting both of these out.
No, I think that's an excellent, excellent point. And the other thing is, just getting this guide puts you ahead of so many people who would just go to 247, right? They would just go to On3 and look at their freshman rankings. And those are great and all. Obviously, like, they do a pretty good job of picking out players that are going to do well in the NFL. Our freshman guys have been higher hits last couple of years, and especially when it comes to college production. Like, you wouldn't know about Ashton Jeanty or Damian Martinez as freshmen if you didn't pick up this guide, if you had only been looking at those recruiting services. But these guys, we're getting better at finding these guys who are going to get early production. this is the place to start.
Well, and I think, Jared, even a bigger one to me is Ollie Gordon. I mean, there's some guys that are on the other ones, but, you know, Ollie Gordon, I think, was pretty exclusive to Campus to Canton as far as the intensity of affection for Ollie Gordon. And so, you know, and look, man, I mean, he obviously he did what he did. Ashton Genty and Ollie Gordon right now, right? They're 1-2 in CFF. So great job.
All righty. Enough of the bragging, enough of the praise heaping.
Somebody's got to brag on you guys. You can't just brag on yourselves, you know?
Bible says let everybody else do the bragging for you. So there
you
I'll
go.
Take
there
it.
You go.
All righty. Let's talk about some of these spring camps here, Josh. We got a lot of interesting stuff, and a lot of these stories will boil down here, or we'll talk about here today, honestly do kind of boil down to certain player that we thought we knew what was going to happen here, now out for spring. What do we expect that to impact when it comes to the fall? Will they be back right where they were? Will this allow opportunity for somebody else? And so we'll start with the first one here. We'll start with Riley Leonard over at Notre Dame, who is out for this spring, unfortunately. He is getting additional surgery on a right ankle surgery that he got in January. It sounds like this is like a ankle sprain. This is not, based on what we know, anything to do with his foot fracture that he had last year, which, according to Nate Marquise, and again, I listen to him exclusively when it comes to player rehab and injury-related news, if it had anything to do with his foot fracture, that'd be a bigger deal. But because that this is just them redoing or potentially redoing the tightrope surgery for a high ankle sprain from earlier this year, he should be good to go for the fall. But Notre Dame does have Steve Angeli there. Never underestimate the guys who are already on the roster, especially guys who've been there for a couple of years. So, Josh, how do you break this down? Do you think that this will impact Riley Leonard in terms of him winning the job in the fall? Or do you think potentially, even if he does win the job, does it limit his ability to be that Mike Denbrock dual threat quarterback that we've come to love over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it does limit him, then we're all in trouble because that's why you like Riley Leonard, right? I mean, not that, you know, he's got some passing potential, but his dual threat abilities is really what you like, especially in that system. Yeah, you know, I don't think it's going to hurt him being the starter, but I do wonder about the second one, right? Is he going to be the same guy, particularly now, you know, the high ankle, yeah, the foot, you know, it's just... And also, is he injury prone now? You know, I kind of think, again, we just talked about the double tap strategy. It's like if you get Riley Leonard and your best balls are in even your redraft and we still don't have information yet, then you better grab Steve Angeli later in the draft. I mean, he's not going to be the same dual threat, but he did have 7 carries for 28 yards in the bowl game. And so at least he offers a little something. But I am concerned. I mean, I don't know how you cannot be by this news just a little bit.
So currently Riley Leonard is going as QB 23 in drafts. Mid to late 9th round is his ADP right now. Josh, would you take Riley Leonard in that range?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I'd probably drop him a couple rounds. I mean, if he fell in the 11th round or 12th, but, you know, and then I'd be, and again, I'd still be tapping Angeli at the end of the draft.
Yeah, I think it has more to do with, am I drafting him as a potential starter, right? If I have 2 quarterbacks already on my team and it's the 9th round, I've already talked about it before where, again, that 7th to 10th round, if I'm drafting 3 quarterbacks in a row, if I get Riley Leonard as my 3rd quarterback, I'm feeling pretty good, right? Like, like if I get a Jackson Arnold and Avery Johnson the 2 rounds ahead of him, like, I'm feeling great getting the potential of Riley Leonard there as my 3rd quarterback. But as soon as I'm looking at him as like, oh, this is my number 2 quarterback, or shoot, maybe you grab him as your 1st quarterback, I'm not feeling so good about that. That's a lot of risk to put into your top, one of your top quarterbacks there. So,
yep, that's good.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about our next team. And I don't like talking Georgia on this podcast because, like, there's one of 3 options that come with talking about Georgia on this team. One, it's either about how horrible their wide receivers are for CFF. 2 is either it's a player doing something dumb, Or three, your name is Brock Bowers. Like, that's pretty much the only three reasons why we would talk about you on this podcast. And unfortunately, we get the second option here today with expected starter running back Trevor Etienne being arrested for a DUI. Literally, as of this morning, as we're recording this podcast, this is obviously not great news whatsoever for people, for anybody, really. Obviously, thankfully, again, arrested, nobody hurt or anything like that. Like, God bless all that. But given, you know, the pattern we've seen with Georgia over the last couple of years, this is obviously not something you want to continue to see here. But the real question for this podcast is, purposes, we don't need to get into the whole deep dive of what Georgia needs to do to fix this problem, but does this affect him for CFF moving forward? Again, as I personally don't think it's going to impact him majorly, I do expect him to probably be out for the spring game just as a punishment for this of some kind. Again, probably a there'll be some opportunities for Roderick Robinson to kind of get those ones carries that ETN probably would normally get during the spring and the fall. So potentially gives him an opportunity to really show his stuff. That could impact him a little bit. And then at most, I would expect a 1-2 game suspension at the start of the season. Now, granted, Georgia does start with Clemson, so that might be a hard sell to certain people on that staff to say, like, hey, this happened in the spring, why are we punishing him in the fall kind of deal? But again, obviously, not great news for anybody involved, and especially drafters who are taking ETN as their RB36 in the 7th round. Not the news you want to hear. So, Josh, what do you think? Do you kind of have a similar outlook on ETN, or are you seeing something different here?
Yeah, I mean, it's conspiracy theory. Did his older brother, like, throw him a bone to, like, hey, can you get in trouble, not play the first game against Clemson? Just messing up. No, you know,
that's a funny theory. I haven't heard that one. That's good.
No, but I don't know. I mean, I hope they suspend him for the spring game and don't start the season with a suspension, because that would be a bummer. It's not going to affect, look, I'm hoping he falls in drafts. If he just falls farther to the 9th or 10th round because of this information, I'm going to take him. I think if he's suspended for that game, you know, whatever. Like, it's week one, bro. Like, we have so many options for running backs that can go off against an FCS opponent. As long as you don't have that penalty in your leagues, which most of ours don't, then you're going to be fine, right? Like, I just don't think this would affect the way that I see him too much, because I know that between your show, our show, other recommendations, we'll have people out there that you can pivot to. That would be great values in week one. And then I think he'll hit a stride. I just love his talent and his opportunity there at Georgia too much. And so if anything, it'll hurt his value a little bit in people's eyes. And I think that I'll draft him in the 9th or 10th round, and that'd be great.
Yeah. If you were a fan of DeAndre Swift back when he was leading the backfield for Georgia, ETN's probably the closest you're going to get to a bell cow at Georgia. Now, that's not going, let me be very clear about that before people like Nate Marquis are jumping my guns about saying that a Georgia player is going to be a massive CFF, or there's going to be a bell cow back at Georgia or anything like that. Yeah, that's not the way Kirby Smart rolls, but ETN, I think, has the chance to be the closest we get to a bell cow at Georgia than we've seen in quite a while. They're still going to throw the ball a ton. It's still Mike Bobo. It's still Carson Beck back there. They got a plethora of receivers to use like they haven't had in the past. They're not going to rely on ETN as a guy through which the offense rolls. But the guys behind ETN right now are Roderick Robinson and Andrew Paul. Andrew Paul coming off an ACL injury still. Roderick Robinson, a true freshman last year, so, you know, as a staff, you're probably not loving the idea of a true sophomore being your number two back when you're a place that is as stacked at the running back position historically as Georgia's been. So ETN, they brought him in for a reason. They're looking to use him at least for this year as a guy that they can rely on in that running game. And hopefully, fingers crossed, no injuries, and he stops doing stupid crap like this.
And they're bringing in three, you know, true freshman running backs,
very
right?
True.
And so it's like they're not going to go in the portal to go get a 7th running back or 8th running back on the roster. So I just think he's pretty safe with with his load, you know, I think you just brought up really good points. I love what you said. I think it's a good assessment of the situation. He's the closest thing since DeAndre Swift and the amount of volume that he'll get.
And the other thing that you really love about Georgia running backs is the fact that when Kirby gets down within 5 yards, he's just going to hand it off to the running back, yep. And you're going to watch them plow over every D-line that they can to get into that end zone. They almost hardly ever really throw it right around the goal line. They trust that O-line. They trust their running backs. ETN's not going to be any different, I don't think.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right. Let's move off this topic, thank God. And let's talk about the Texas wide receiver situation. This has been quite a roller coaster for CFF players. Again, obviously, myself included, a lot of us loved Jonte Cook coming in last year. They lose Adonai Mitchell. They lose Xavier Worthy. They had some holes to fill here, and a lot of us got concerned when they bring in Isaiah Bond. They bring in Matthew Golden. They bring in Silas Bolden. Three talented wide receivers, three starters at their old school out of the transfer portal. And it looked like guys like Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore, guys like them were going to get sidelined for, you know, the hot new transfers, right? Well, it looks like that, according to a post from ontexasfootball.com, your three starters currently for the Texas Longhorns are Isaiah Bond, no surprise there, I don't think, for anybody, Jonte Cook, which is welcome news, and DeAndre Moore currently hanging out in that slot position and is drawing a lot of praise, not just from this beat writer at ontexasfootball.com. I've seen multiple reports saying that DeAndre Moore is turning heads for the Longhorns. Meanwhile, with the second team, you got Matthew Golden back there. You also have Ryan Wingo, the true freshman, already working with the second team. So I'll save that for the next Defending the Natty episode right there. But the thing that really was the big takeaway for me is that we feared that, again, Bolden, Golden, and Bond were just going to be shoe-in starters. They were brought into it. That doesn't really seem to be the case. It really does seem that the staff is evaluating every one of these guys on the same playing field. It strikes me that we have a transfer already in starting spot in Bond, but then you already have transfers like Golden just already with the second team. So it's not automatically assumed these guys will be all starters. This could change probably by the end of the spring, potentially by the fall and everything like that. But to me, that is really good news if you're looking for some value in this Texas wide receiver room. I personally have not been going after guys like Bond. I think that he's going too high currently. But guys like Jonte Cook, wide receiver 87 in ADP right now, 18th round. Silas Bolden, now he's not on campus yet. But then also, again, DeAndre Moore, he's not going in any CFF drafts right now. Like 30-round drafts, he's not being taken. Meanwhile, Matthew Golden, who we know for a fact is now on the second team, being drafted in the 11th round. So to me, Matthew Golden might be one of the worst values in CFF right now. But yep. Josh, what's your takeaways from this news? What do you think, man?
Well, I mean, I think it's been very confirming. You know, it's interesting when the Texas wide receivers and tight end Jatavion Sanders went to the combine, they're all asking them, hey, who's the next guy to step up? And everybody's just talking about Cook, right? And the pro day happens, they're talking about Cook again. I mean, you know, I think what you said was a great assessment. Like, people overreacted to the news that they're bringing in some transfer wide receivers, thinking that was an indictment on Cook, when it just wasn't. And you know, Cook really should, I think, be going in the Golden spot, which is like the 12th, 13th round. Golden was never going to be the guy because Golden is a possession receiver, essentially, in this offense. Mm-hmm. And Bond was going to be the guy that's going to, you know, move around, potentially take the top off the defense, but Cook can do that too. And so those are the two guys. Like, if you get one of those two guys, you're going to get the wide receiver one, in my opinion, in that offense. You know, just see what's going to happen. You can get Bond in the 9th and you get Cook in the 19th. I suspect that that's going to change, that Cook's going to go much earlier. But I'm with you. If I can only take one of those two, I'm going to take Cook. I mean, I really do think Cook is the guy, and we're kind of drafting it wrong. But we'll see. And the other thing is that, you know, we've seen that Ewers has a hard time throwing the deep ball. Mm-hmm. And that's really what Bond can do at this point. Where Cook is a much more, to me, is a much more diverse route runner. So he's going to get a lot more of those slants and things like that, that he's going to be able to take. They have some chemistry built up already. I just think Bond is the safest one of those three. And that's not even counting DeAndre Moore, who's also a very good route runner.
No, absolutely. I'm in full agreement with you that, again, switch Golden and Cook's values. Honestly, again, if Golden continues to work with the second team, like, Sarkisian's not a... He's not a coach that typically rotates his wide receivers a ton. Now, that's not to say that that can't change this year. Again, they brought in these guys for a reason. Looks like maybe they wanted, at the very least, some depth, bringing in guys like Golden and maybe Bolden if he can't overtake DeAndre Moore in that slot position. Those can be guys that they can rotate in and out of there. They can go into more five wide receiver sets, things like that, so they can feel like there's actually some things they can work on there. But yeah, again, I'm fully with you. Bond, Cook, those are the two. Those are probably the only two wide receivers I would consider in this offense. And even then, like, I pointed out that Xavier Worthy, for as much as high as we drafted him the last 2 years, he did not return value in either of those years. Now, granted, last year was a bit of touchdown. I say luck, but I think there's also some situational ball there, as you pointed out there, Josh, where viewers can't throw the deep ball. That's where Worthy excelled. But once they got near the goal line, he went for the bigger wide receiver in Adonai Mitchell almost every time. That's why Adonai Mitchell got so many more touchdowns than Worthy did last year. Why Worthy, even though he had almost 900 yards, only had 5 touchdowns on the year. And thus ended up as wide receiver 40. So I'm with you, though, that Bond and Cook, if I'm taking a shot on a Texas wide receiver, those are the guys to go after.
And Jared, like, you know, and I think that's a good point, too. So if we find out, right, for whatever reason, that Cook is the guy or Bond is the guy, don't start drafting him in like the third round. Like,
no, we've been down that road before.
Yeah, like ninth round is good value. Like, that's a good place to draft these type of Texas wide receivers at this point, with Ewers as their QB. Like, I just think that, like, we, like, there's a, you know, I don't know, I guess there's a lid on that offense, at least on the explosiveness of it, until Ewers can figure out how to throw the deep ball. And so they're just not going to have those uber explosive touchdowns, at least not yet. We haven't seen it in this offense, at least not from the 40 yard, you know, the ball traveling 40 yards in the air or anything like that.
One last thing I'll touch on with Texas real quick that I found interesting was the fact that in this same depth chart that was provided to us on texasfootball.com, Gunnar Helm currently listed as the starter at tight end. A lot of people, including myself, big fans of Amari Nyblak, have been drafting Amari Nyblak as the starting tight end there at Texas. Now, what I'm not saying here is immediately slot in Gunnar Helm into whatever you thought Amari Nyblak was going to be. Gunnar Helm, as far as I can tell, gets that starting spot because of his blocking ability. He had a blocking percentage snaps of 64.2% last year. Meanwhile, Jatavion Sanders was down just under 50%. Amari Nyblak had a blocking percentage at Alabama of 34.9%. Two different tight ends, two different skill sets. If Amari Nyblak continues to impress, which he has impressed, he's been turning a lot of heads at spring camp so far, he's going to be the guy you want if you're looking for a receiving option at tight end at Texas. Now, I think the news here really is that, again, if Nyblak can't get better at blocking, his snaps are going to be lower than we anticipate. He's not going to get quite that clear tight end one, always on the field like Jatavion Sanders was the past 2 years. And he'll be very situational, which will limit his upside as a CFF tight end. But again, just something to note there for those of you who like Amari Nyblak and have been drafting him. Again, he's been going around the 15th round, tight end 17, very much somebody that people will kind of grab, throw on there as a high upside second option at tight end. Just something to keep in mind. Josh, you have any reaction to that? Or are you ready to move on?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you had a great assessment of that. It's like his ceiling is great, but again, like, there's only so many balls to go around. I mean, unless he's going to be some like crazy red zone target, or, you know, Ewers can figure out how to throw the ball down the seam to his tight end and, you know, do that. He is the guy to own. Helm is not the guy. So no. I thought that was great. So we can move on.
All right, let's move on. And let's head on over to Louisville. And for those of you who are getting ready to close your ears, thinking I'm going to talk about the Louisville RB situation for the upteenth time this offseason, you're correct. I will talk about that, but it's going to be very quick because I don't want to be accused of spreading misinformation regarding the running back situation there at Louisville. But we're mostly going to talk about wide receivers and tight ends here, so we'll get to that. I do want to say again, with the RB situation, I've expressed my doubts on Penny Boone being able to take over that Jawar Jordan role and being able to be that clear RB1 at Louisville, have the upside of guys like that in the past. According to spring camps, he is getting most of the RB1 reps with Maurice Turner and Don Chaney kind of getting mixed in there. So again, I'm not saying I'm wrong yet because I still have my doubts about his ability to translate back at the Power 4 level, but clearly the staff believes in him. And so I want to make that known to everybody else out there. Now, wide receivers. To nobody's surprise, Ja'Cory Brooks and Colin Lacey, the two transfer wide receivers that Louisville brought in here, seem to be the most consistent wide receivers with the one, like I said, to really nobody's surprise. The thing I find interesting is my hesitant with Colin Lacey has been the fact that, again, he was mostly a slot wide receiver at South Alabama. In Jeff Brohm's system, it's been the outside guys that typically get the love. So Ja'Cory Brooks lining up on the outside seemed like a pretty good value considering that he was going quite a bit later. Again, wide receiver 62 in the 14th round compared to Colin Lacey going wide receiver 18 in the 4th round. I was kind of interested in that. But according to these reports, Lacey's being moved around all over the field, not just in the slot. And to me, that is a pretty ringing endorsement of the Lacey believers. Like, you don't move guys around if you think that you're not going to target them a whole bunch. You want to create mismatches for them because you know that when they get the ball, they are going to do great things. So I think that's a really, really good endorsement for the Lacey fans out there. It makes me a bit more confident in him moving forward. Josh, what about you? You hear anything about Louisville or what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, I mean, part of it, Brohm is such a talented play caller, right? And so good at identifying how to use his personnel. He's going to use whoever's the most talented guy. He's not going to be stuck to just an outside wide receiver if he has the inside, right? Like he did it with Rondale Moore at one point. And even back in the day when he had two of them at Western Kentucky, right? He had Tywan Teller and I think he had Nicholas Norris in the slot. And the slot still produced, right? Really, really well. Now, Ja'Cory Brooks, he doesn't sniff a candle to Tywan Teller comparatively to their G5, P5 levels. Or even Jared Dangerfield for that matter with Western Kentucky. It's like, I'm not worried about Ja'Cory Brooks overtaking Colin Lacey for the wide receiver one. I just think Colin Lacey, whether he's just exclusively slot or he's going inside and outside and he's getting the mismatches, like they're going to feature that guy in this offense. I think they picked him to do that. We just saw Thrash pre-hand injury did really well in this system. And so we know that Brohm is good at identifying G5 to P5 wide receivers. And Colin Lacey, I think is a bit more productive than Jamari Thrash was at Georgia State. So I like Lacey, man. I think, he is starting to dip up in the drafts. And so I don't know how much higher than I would take him than, the mid fourth round where he's going, but maybe I would go as high as the latter end of the third round potentially. But I don't know. I mean, I do like Colin Lacey.
Sorry, I just had a complete brain fart. I had a thought of where I was going to go next with this, and it completely just escaped me. I'm agreeing with you that as much as we've seen the outside position be pretty consistent for Jeff Brohm the last couple of years, again, you point out the examples of West Kentucky. Rondale Moore is another great one where there's a clear talent. Brohm's not an idiot. He's not going to force feed somebody he doesn't think is going to produce well for his offense. If Lacey is that guy. Now, again, there's been pretty, again, not glowing reports of Brooks, but he's been out there the most consistent along with Lacey. He's not being rotated in and out. So clearly the staff believes in him somewhat as well. And I still think he's a great value going where he's going as getting as your fifth or sixth wide receiver. Because if they do kind of stick to that outside wide receiver role, then I mean, Brooks is going to be fantastic, right?
But, totally. And you and I have gotten him in the early to mid 20s. He's going very late.
He's going up a little bit now. Ever since we kind of first pointed that out to people, but like again, yeah. I agree. Yeah, like in the late 20s, yeah, he'll be there sometimes.
I mean, this is another double tap situation. Why not get Lacy in the fifth, fourth round, wherever he's going, and then come back in the 18th? I would go as high as the 18th, 17th round with him. And
yeah,
like, look, now I just secured.
Cause like who else is what going
should in, be the wide receiver one?
Like who else is going in the 18th, 17th round, right? Like, let me look at my ADP real quick. Right. So like around that, like you're looking at, I don't know, Antonio Williams at Clemson, Barry and Brown, Kentucky, Jamal Banks, Nebraska, Chris Tyree, Virginia. Again, that might be a good pick, but there's a lot of risk there. Kobe Prentice, Alabama, like.
Yeah, they're the same type of picks, right? And,
exactly.
And Brooks, it's like what we haven't seen is the wide receiver one for Jeff Brom really fail in the last 10 years. I mean, you got to go back really far to find that. So he always produces.
All right, a little bit more tight end talk. Again, I promise we're not going to touch on the tight end situation at every school we talk about here today, but you know, Jeff Brom, tight ends have been good for us in the past. Payne Durham there for 2 years at Purdue before him. Bryson Hopkins was an absolute terror in 2018 and 2019. Shoot, in 2019, he was 61 catches, 830 yards, 7 tight ends. That's good for a top 5 tight end performance at any given point. I don't care what year it is. So it's something to keep an eye on for Louisville here. They did bring in 2 tight ends out of the transfer portal. You got Mark Redmond, the transfer from San Diego State, but also the beat reporters have been telling us to keep an eye on Jaleel Skinner. Again, a bit smaller guy, more of a big slot receiver build than an actual tight end build. But again, tight end eligibility plays in line. Why not? He has been performing well all over the field in practice so far. And so if he becomes that main receiving threat to go along with Brooks and Lacy, shoot, you're talking about a guy that I don't think I've seen being taken in drafts like at all this year. And so just a name to keep an eye on there with Jaleel Skinner. What about you, Josh?
I think Jaleel Skinner is, again, if we're getting hype on him, yeah, take him. I mean, the guy's talented. I mean, he's a talented guy. His big problem is he hasn't been able to put on weight. And so he wasn't going to get featured in a Mario Cristobal offense if he's not versatile enough in the blocking scheme. But I don't know if Brom is going to care about that enough. I mean, Durham and Hopkins were a little bit bigger. But even a Tyler Higbee, who was at Western Kentucky with him.
Yes, that is true.
You know, he was more of just a straight receiving threat. And that was all he pretty much did. So anyways, I think there's definitely some precedent here. And Jaleel Skinner, you know, if you're getting him in the 30th round where I'm getting Garrett Oakley, yeah, take a shot on Jaleel Skinner.
All right, let's move on to the next team here. Let's go talk about the Arizona State Sun Devils here, where we got some news that assume starting quarterback, I guess, again, technically him, Bourget, and transfer Sam Levitt were all fighting for a job, but he started as a true freshman last year. Jaden Rashada is out for the spring. This is a non-football injury. Apparently, he injured his thumb while moving, had to get surgery on it, is now out for the spring. Rashada, honestly, surprisingly, at least based on the ADP I have, has not been going in the top 20 rounds, which I thought people might be a bit more interested in him and like being the starting quarterback for a Kenny Dillingham offense. But does this leave room for a guy like Sam Levitt, same year as him, another talented borderline 5-star quarterback coming into Arizona State, potentially for him to take the job? Or maybe we go back to the days of Trenton Bourget, which I hope nobody is hoping for that. Do you think it opens up an opportunity for one of those guys, Josh, or do you think this is Rashada's job no matter what? He'll be back in the fall.
I definitely think it opens up. I mean, I don't think Rashada was good enough in the fall. I mean, he had certainly had like some flashes. He flashes his arm strength. That's what he flashes. His decision-making also shows up and is quite alarming. So I don't think, you know, I don't think Kenny Dillingham has the is afforded the time or the ability to, you know, just assure jobs to Rashada. So, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to see what Levitt has, right? Mm-hmm. If he can be the guy in this offense and raise the floor on what that position can offer. And really, we want to know, can whoever's throwing the ball get the ball to Elijah Badger? Or is that going to be a wasted pick, right? Because he's the one that's going really high. Or also the same thing with Scatabo there is like, is he going to be worth the pick up there if they can't throw the ball and then they can stack the box again against him? So I'm interested definitely. And obviously don't want anything to ever happen to somebody, but I do appreciate the opportunity for us to be able to see what Levitt has to offer. Cause if it's, you know, Borgett, then, you know, we're out on that. It is Rashada's job. So, I like this for the opportunity it provides us to really analyze this situation.
I definitely agree with you. I will say if it is a scenario where Rashada comes back and he's still kind of given that job once he comes back, do you think it probably limits his ability to have that kind of year two bounce? Like you mentioned, as a true freshman last year, he made a ton of true freshman mistakes, and that was to be expected. But also it made sense from a guy like Kenny Dillingham's perspective, where your second best options were Trenton Borgett and Drew Pine. All right. Those guys were dead enders. They weren't going to get you anywhere. Might as well throw Rashada out there, let him make his mistakes, and then we'll get him a year in the offense and we'll see what he can do year two. Well, now you had him injured for 9 games last year, and now he's out for the spring. So it feels like there's going to be some developmental delay here in terms of his ability to truly command a Kenny Dillingham offense moving forward. So definitely, again, not that he's been going super high in drafts, but I think it definitely hurts any kind of upside that he potentially could have in those later rounds.
And I think you're right. I mean, I think you look at, you know, Kenny Dillingham really comes from the Mike Norvell tree. Mm-hmm. And those guys tend to lean towards more veteran-like quarterbacks, right? Even back to the Memphis days, they were always bringing in some like JUCO or some transfer to come in and have the job that, you know, 2 or 3 years of experience. And you always saw that kind of year to leap from some of those guys. You saw it with Jordan Travis there at Florida State. So I do think it kind of hurts him a little bit, right? Like, unless he's studying the film all, you know, the whole time. I don't trust Rashada based on his decision-making and his recruiting process that he's like a grinder in the film room and all that. Like, I don't trust him to take a step based on what I know of Rashada for this next year. But we'll see.
All right. Let's move on to the SEC. Let's go talk the Ole Miss running back situation. A lot of moving parts here with Ole Miss. Obviously, the main thing here was their loss of Quinshon Judkins. That kind of put Ole Miss in a position I don't think they really expected going into the offseason of having to replace a talent like his. So he leaves. They bring in Logan Diggs from LSU. But unfortunately, it looks like they brought in a broken Logan Diggs, who was injured in the last game versus Wisconsin, the bowl game there. He is now undergoing knee surgery. Again, it's been very unclear as to what this injury was. There's some rumor that it was an ACL injury, which I don't know if I believe that, because I just don't see Lane Kiffin bringing him in if it was confirmed to be an ACL injury, because getting injured with ACL that late in the season, like, you're not getting him next year. We saw it with Cam Rising. We see it with a ton of these guys with soft tissue injuries, especially in bowl games. It takes them a while to get back, especially running backs as well. Like, that's not something you want to re-aggravate. So he is now out for the spring, and that leaves Ulysses Bentley there. Again, now been with Ole Miss for, this will be his third year, so very familiar with Lane Kiffin's offense. But they're also bringing in, it seems like, Henry Parrish, who just entered the transfer portal, heavily rumored that he'll be returning to Ole Miss, where he originally was before going to the Miami Hurricanes. So, Josh, I guess the question is, how are you navigating this backfield in terms of CFF purposes? because Bentley and Diggs, before this injury or before this news with Diggs, were going right around each other, right? Bentley, RB 84, 18th round, 7th pick. Logan Diggs, 4 picks later, RB 86, 18th round, 11th pick. So they're going right next to each other. Obviously, this hurts Diggs now. They're bringing in Parrish. Who are you investing in for this Ole Miss backfield? Because, again, if any of these guys get Judkins' role, 18th round, huge value here. But is it worth it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm punting all of this. I believe that Diggs has some kind of serious knee injury. I think that's why they went after Parrish. And kind of back toward that thing. and because I just both message boards, both LSU and Ole Miss are kind of saying the same thing about Diggs and saying that they do think it's an ACL or that he's not going to be back until midseason. So I'm concerned. And I don't think Parrish or Bentley are big enough in the SEC to carry the load the way that, you know, Judkins did. And Parrish, you know, I've watched him enough at Miami to know that he's just a limited back. I mean, he's really good at what he does, but at 190, I mean, he can only do so much. And he's just not that dynamic. So, you know, the one hope is that Kedrick Risano to me can come up and be something. But, and I know they have high hopes for him, but there's a reason they brought in Diggs, right? There's a reason they're bringing in and Parrish. And it's not just because Judkins left. They must not think that, you know, Kedrick is ready, you know, to really step in.
I was about to say, there's a reason why Kedrick Riscano didn't get on the field a whole ton last year. I think that was a big shock to a lot of us, because I know the guys at C2C, a lot of them really thought that he would just take over that RB2 role behind Judkins almost immediately. And then when Judkins left, he would be that clear next guy up over there. And then just for the most part, nothing. Last year. So it's a big jump if he does become the clear RB1 there.
Right. And to be fair, right, like I feel like it's not a one for one, but like Mekhi Bernard with Utah, like he just has a role in the offense and they trust and they love him. And I think there's a little bit of that with Bentley, right? Like they love his skill set and what he does. And he's super dynamic. I mean, we've seen him in a feature role with SMU. You know, carrying the ball quite a bit. And he's so explosive. So I think he's a really good SEC back with what he does. I just don't see him. He couldn't run between the tackles when he was at SMU. And he hasn't really had the chance to prove it a ton at Ole Miss, but he would have to improve quite a bit on his vision to be able to do that. It's like if Donovan Edwards started running between the tackles.
Exactly. Which, who knows if that ever happens. I will say, personally, for me, I'm okay with investing in Bentley at his current price. Again, 18th round, like, that's super late. Like, you're, again, RB 84, what'd I say? 84? Like, that's your 7th running back on your roster. Like, if your 7th run, if 1 through 6 aren't working out well for you, and you're relying on your RB7 to get you through most weeks, like, you're probably in trouble regardless. I'm personally okay with taking the shot. If he ends up being not a zero, because I think he can't be a zero given how much his workload is already there, I think it's a fine investment.
Well, and Jared, okay, let's play this scenario out. Like, say that the running game stinks at Ole Miss. Like, he's still going to have a role because he's a third down back, and he'll be more than that, right? He'll just run outside zone. And he'll get, you know, some screen passes, and he's a dynamic, pass catcher. So he's the one that does have the most secure role of the three, even if none of them prove that they can run the ball.
I would agree. All right, let's move on over. Staying in the SEC, but also more running back injury news here. Let's head on over to South Carolina, where it is confirmed now that Raheem Sanders will be out for the spring, continuing to rehab a shoulder injury that he sustained from last year. I've kind of made my thoughts on this transfer pretty well known. Now, he went on and did an interview with Paul Feinbaum recently, talking about how he wanted to be close to home. I don't fault that whatsoever. I personally think that if he was looking for any kind of development, getting ready for the NFL, I think that ship sailed given his injury. And also, like, going to South Carolina makes no sense, because if you wanted to go from a struggling SEC team with major O-line issues to another SEC team with major O-line issues, even more major O-line issues, that's exactly what he did. So I personally wasn't much in on Raheem Sanders regardless before this injury, but obviously there are people who are, because if you look at his ADP, he's being taken RB38, seventh round a lot of times in these drafts. So clearly it's kind of there's two schools of thought out there, right? There's like my school of thought where I'm out on him completely. I don't like his injury. I don't like the fact that there are some serious O-line issues at South Carolina. They're going to make sure that he gets hit behind the line quite a bit. Historically, there's been a committee here with Shane Beamer. But then there's also people who are saying, like, this room was Raheem Sanders or bust, man. Like, this, like, they brought him in to be the guy. And if you listen to how Shane Beamer talks about Raheem Sanders, clearly he loves Raheem Sanders and what he can bring to this team. Josh, where do you fall between those two schools of thought? And really, how do you think this impacts either one of those schools of thought?
All right. Yeah, you know, we talked about the things that I'm rethinking from the beginning of February when we first started doing these drafts. And Raheem Sanders is one of them. At the beginning of February, he's a guy that if I get him in the 11th round, yeah, I'll take that shot. But with this injury news, I mean, I think, and just knowing kind of the history of these backfields, I'm a little bit more hesitant to dive in on Rocket Sanders. Now, I did read some stuff that he had talks with Missouri in the offseason before he transferred to South Carolina. Why didn't he go there?
I know, right? Like, again, he apparently wanted to be close to home. So again, I can get that from a human perspective, but also from a CFF perspective, what the heck, dude?
I know. I mean, if we're talking about like his future and like if he's really wanting to do an upgrade here, I mean, if South Carolina really is like to get closer to his family, then what are we doing? I mean, I don't know. And Oscar Attaway is not a slouch. I mean, people might not know him because he's at UNT and he struggled with injuries himself. But and this other guy that they brought in from the D2 level, I mean, he's a back that, I don't know. I mean, you bring in three transfer running backs. It's a little bit like, what are we doing here? So I, you know, if I hear that Rocket Sanders gets down to his goal weight of 225, then maybe I'll be back in. But you know, for now, I'll let other people draft him in the range that he's going, and I'll pick my QBs there.
Yeah, I know. And again, for me, I can't get past the historic committee that this offense has been in the past. Yeah, like totally. Shane Beamer came in on 2021. And absolutely killed Kevin Harris, just completely butchered him, was a monster in 2020, came in, made sure that guy got less than 150 carries and over 12 games. And you're just like, well, shoot. Thanks for that, Shane. So,
exactly.
So again, if he had a talented back like Kevin Harris, like I'm not going to trust this backfield at all.
Right.
All right.
Totally.
Let's finish up with some G5 schools here. Josh, let's go and talk about UAB. Again, I've talked about this situation already. I won't dive into why I like Lee Bebe over Isaiah Jacobs just in general. Again, if you want to listen to that, go check out some of the previous episodes where we talk about that. But to add on to everything else, and again, this is something I kind of thought about given the fact that Jacobs had been injured, but is now confirmed, he is out for the spring. And according to Alabama.com, Lee Bebe is the clear number one back right now for this offense. Obviously, you got Amarni Goodwin, the LSU running back transfer coming in. He'll probably be a factor. So to me, it's kind of the same thing as like with Jaden Rashada and so many of these other guys that we've been talking about who are injured during spring. Does any of this change when it comes back into the fall? Or again, I think Lee Bebe is a good enough back to even when Jacobs comes back in the fall, if he's still got some injury concerns, if he's still kind of limited based on his rehab and everything like that, I don't know that Lee Bebe gives up this job. But Josh, I know you've kind of had some thoughts on this UAB running back situation. So how do you read this? What do you think is going to happen moving forward?
Yeah, bad time for Jacobs to be injured, right? So, cause you know, Lee is definitely talented enough to take over this backfield, you know, I guess my only hesitation with him is that his two big games of the year were against North Texas, which was the worst rushing defense in the nation last year.
Yes.
And then you had, I can't remember the other team. I'm blanking on the other team that he faced right before that, but they were like Oh, Temple. Yes. And it was, they were like the seventh best.
Atrocious.
Or seventh worst. Yeah. So, it, you know, it's a little bit like he's done that, but he is talented. I mean, you see that on the screen. He's big. He's 210, right? And yep. I think he hit 20.68 according to Real Analytics MPH, which is a fast time for a G5 back. You know, so he's talented, right? And Armani Goodwin, I do think he can play a factor. But the question with Armani Goodwin is, torn ACL and PCL in high school, mm-hmm. right? He comes to college, has a decent freshman year, high ankle sprain. Then he starts off as a starting running back as a true sophomore, starts like six games. And then he hurts his knee, right? And then he doesn't play at all last year because of that. So the question is like, all right, Armani Goodwin may be talented, but can he stay on the field and be healthy? Mm-hmm. At this point, why not? Like with Lee in the 20th round, I mean, or I'm seeing a lot in the 20th round. Why not take that shot on him at that point? I don't think I would on Jacobs. I would maybe on Goodwin in the 30th round, but like at this point, Lee, he's going to be the guy. He's going to have the opportunity to separate himself. And he could be a huge value by the time that we get to CFF in the fall.
Yeah, I think the other thing with me, and I laid this out in detail in the past, is that Jacobs, again, you're talking about things I rethought of, like since we started and everything, I was ready to go full on with Jacobs because I was like, man, he was the 1B to Jermaine Brown Jr. last year before he got hurt and everything. And I went back and looked, and man, he was not good. He yeah. really is just not good. And especially if you're looking at a guy that can also provide some receiving options for a team that threw almost 40 times per game last year. Like Jacobs is very limited in that factor. Like he got under 4 yards per catch last year. Meanwhile, BB was upwards of 7, and Jermaine Brown Jr. obviously was upwards of 10, was just an absolute monster last year. But
yeah,
as you mentioned, BB is just kind of the more talented dude right now. So yeah, I'll take the shot there. Again, I got him in the 18th round in my ADP. Like you said, That's that range where you can have guys that go off in the 16th round. They can go off in round 25. It's kind of a crapshow depending on who you're drafting with. But regardless, once you kind of get past those first major tiers, yeah, I'll take the shot on BB.
Well, and, you know, Jacobs, yeah, he was terrible at catching passes. The minimum amount of passes he had, though, per game was 3. He had 3 or 4 in every game that he played in last year.
Oh, for sure.
So they threw him the ball. And it's like, okay, if you're going to get that kind of – you know, productivity to Lee, and he can get 7 yards a catch and really probably be more explosive, right? He's had 2 catches for 39 yards, I think, against his last opponent, North Texas. And so, you know, I definitely see it. I'm glad that Froton brought it up on our show. I'm glad that you guys are talking about Lee. I mean, these are types of guys that we need to be having conversations about because he's got potential, and this is a backfield that will have success.
If we keep talking about him, he's going to start going like the 8th, 9th round, and then we're all going to be sitting there like, yeah. Maybe we pump the brakes, maybe pump the brakes.
Yeah. That's why we do this though, right? We sacrifice our own stuff for the people.
All right, let's go and move on to San Jose State. Again, if you want some talk about the offensive coordinator hire here with Greg Stutzman, go listen to the show I did with the G5 Hive guys, Justice and Luke. When I brought them on, we dove into this pretty in-depth of what he's been able to do. But I want to reiterate what he was able to do in his 1 year as an offensive coordinator back at Utah Tech, formerly Dixie State. And Joey Hobert, man, when he was able to produce a top-end wide receiver when he was at Utah Tech there. 90 catches, 1,258 yards, 16 touchdowns, like just an absolute monster. But Hobert follows Stutzman to Texas State. Last year, Stutzman was the wide receivers coach for Texas State. Hobert goes off again, 76 catches, 895 yards, 8 touchdowns. I forget how many games he played, but I believe he played only like 9 or 10 games, so like, if you stretched out to 12 games, yeah, he would have done extremely well once again. So it kind of leaves this Rorschach test, right? Was Hobert great because that's Stutzman's system and he features one guy? Or was Hobert just that dang good and Stutzman had no reason not to feature him, or, and in the case of Texas State, kind of bring him up to the offensive coordinator or G.J. Kinney over there at Texas State and be like, "Look, yo, we need to feed this guy the ball as much as we can." Why am I talking about this? I just realized because I never actually brought up the title of this segment. If you're watching on YouTube, you're wondering, like, when are you going to get to the point here, Jared? Justin Lockhart is a wide receiver that a lot of us liked going into last year with Elijah Cooks off to... He didn't really go to the NFL. He was just kind of out of eligibility. But Lockhart seemed like that next guy up at San Jose State, and he gets injured right before the season. Never plays it down last year. Well, he's back. He's got another year of eligibility. He's got one more year here. New offensive coordinator, who I just pointed out, has featured a wide receiver in the past. Is this a rebound season for Lockhart? Or do we look at this and look at a guy like Nick Nash and say, like, nah, Nick Nash is less injured. He led the room last year. He's going to be the guy this year. What do you think, Josh? Or is this wide receiver room even investing in? Are we chasing our tails here?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. I don't know if it's worth investing in. I mean, Stutzman, right? He has a Utah Tech year, the 1 year as offensive coordinator. And then, you know, it's like Emory and Henry. He's 2 years early on, right, as an mm-hmm. OC. So none at the FBS level. And then he's been a guy on staff, right, a passing game coordinator for Texas State. But he hasn't been a guy that's led these offenses, which he's been a part of some great ones, right? He much was with Nick Rolovich for a long time with the run and shoot type stuff. I will say,
Josh, do you know what Sussman calls his version of the run and shoot?
The spread and shed.
The spread and shred. It's awesome.
Yeah. Killer name. Hopefully he's as good of a play caller as a, you know, name caller. So, you know, I don't know. Here's the thing too. And correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that Joey Hobert was out of the slot last year. Mm-hmm. And Lockhart and Nick Nash, right? The other two guys that were there. I mean, they're not slot guys. They're outside wide receivers. So we haven't really seen, there's just a lot of like unknowns here. You know, you brought it up in the notes, like the QB too. Like, do we really know? There's so many unknowns. It's like, maybe we should wait a year with Craig Stutzman to see what he can do to bring in his guys and all that. Cause I just don't know. Cause I would want to go for a slot guy in this offense. And I don't even know who that would be, to be honest.
Yeah. And again, and there's also the possibility that these guys get moved around just because Lockhart played the outside in the past doesn't mean the Stutzman comes in and says like, "Hey, no, Lockhart, you're our best wide receiver. The best wide receiver always plays in the slot in my system. So we're going to move you over there. We want to make sure that we can get you the ball as much as possible. That's the best way to do it." I agree with you that for now, as much fun as it is kind of unearthing, and once again, this is now a known unknown in terms of what we're looking at here with this offense.
Yeah.
It's still probably not advantageous to throw darts here because, like you said, there's just so much we don't know. Again, do they even have the quarterback to do anything this year? Again, Jay Butterfield, former blue chip quarterback, that could be fun. Emmett Brown is a transfer to bring it in. Dorian Hale is a guy that I know Nick Ian Allen likes, brought up on his Good Morning College Football show a couple of weeks ago. He's a JUCO transfer quarterback that apparently is doing well so far. Again, maybe they do, maybe they don't. This absolutely feels like a perfect situation to go onto Fantrax in your league, and you see that little star next to people's name that adds them to a watch list. You add Justin Lockhart to a watch list. You add Nick Nash to a watch list. You add any other wide receiver in this system that maybe comes up of interest throughout the offseason. And you see how they do the first couple of weeks, and they're an instant waiver wire add if things are going well early on. But make sure you add to the watch list so you don't forget about them.
It's good.
So, all right. One last team we'll talk about here. We'll stay in the Mountain West, and we'll stay talking about wide receivers here. Let's talk about Utah State and the wide receiver situation we have going on over here. We saw this past year that Terrell Vaughn and Jalen Royals, this is a system that can produce two top-end CFF wide receivers, especially when really there's only two that they can count on. Now, Micah Davis was mixed in there as well, an explosive player, very much a deep ball specialist at times. So obviously, I was interested in Micah Davis going into this year. Jalen Royals comes back. He's a first, second-round pick in CFF drafts for a reason, should be able to do what he does. Once again, But Micah Davis is now out for the spring after having surgery on his foot after getting injured at the end of last year. This opens up the opportunity to me to a lot of other guys here. And the most notable, the one with the most buzz, is JUCO transfer Robert Freeman. Obviously, again, this is not great analysis, but again, we know for a fact that Utah State is okay with these JUCO transfers. I mean, Terrell Vaughn was a JUCO transfer a couple of years ago, and look what he was able to do. The talk around this dude has been absolutely glowing. Like, this is a report from Deseret.com, one of the local beat writers there, and I'm just gonna quote exactly what they say here, word for word, just so you can kind of understand exactly how they talk about this dude. And though there are multiple players that will vie for the role, there's talk about the slot role, junior college transfer Robert Freeman IV has a chance to lock down the position this spring. Anderson noted that Freeman, a JUCO All-American wide receiver and kick returner, has the potential to be the next diminutive Aggie great. He is listed at 5'8", 165 pounds. So on the smaller side, this is me talking now. Back to the quote, this one specifically from Blake Anderson, the head coach. He fits the mold of what we've seen with DT, referring to Devin Tompkins and Terrell. Anderson said, quote, the guy literally did not come off the field for American River College last year except for defense. He played on basically every special teams and offensive snap. He was the most dynamic player in person, but also one of the most dynamic players on tape and a great dude. Continuing the quote, we absolutely love his personality when he came on his visit, and those guys just raved about how hard he worked, what kind of teammate he was, and how much he loved the ball. It just made a lot of sense to us. So I don't know about you guys. This is me talking now. That's about as glowing of a report as you can possibly get. But here's the thing. To start off the spring, he's working fourth team, working fourth among the slot receivers. Now, I think, given the report that we just read, that's not going to last long. And if you're a numbers, like if you're somebody like a numbers truther where you think the number that a player has on a team matters, I'll give you the numbers of the different slot receivers right now. White has 26 as his number. McGilvery has 84. Davis has 11. And Robert Freeman IV has 0. I don't know about you guys, but 0 seems like kind of one of those important numbers that they don't just hand out to anybody on a team. I don't care where he is on the depth chart technically to start spring. Yep. This Robert Freeman guy is interesting, Josh. He plays in the slot where Terrell Vaughn played in last year, and he's currently going well outside the 20th round in a lot of drafts, and I know for a fact you've been drafting him in later rounds in drafts, so I pretty much got to shut up at this point and kind of let you speak at one point. You probably were, you and Mike Bainbridge were probably on this guy earlier than anybody else, and sorry to tell you guys, but the hype train's starting to leave the station with him, I think, pretty soon. But what do you think about him?
I clearly love him. I'll tell you a little bit of our thought process going into this was, you know, people were drafting Micah Davis, you know, relatively not early, but as a second Utah State wide receiver. And as Zach and I were doing the projections, we're like, hey, like, look, the last 10 years, a Blake Anderson top two wide receivers, one has been outside and one has been the slot, but it's never been two outside wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And Micah Davis and Jalen Royals are outside wide receivers, right? And we know historically about Utah State slot. So we were like, okay, who's going to be the slot receiver? We started looking into Robert Freeman, and holy cow, like I went and watched his tape and I'm like, man, he's not a burner. He's quicker than fast, but man, he's dynamic with the ball in his hands. And do you know who his JUCO QB was?
Who was his JUCO QB?
Spencer Petras, who's like there now.
Oh my God. No way.
Yeah, so I'm like, if, you know, I'm not counting on Spencer winning that role whatsoever, but if he does, I mean, they got a whole year together. I'm like, why not keep that conspiracy theory going? But I just thought that was interesting. And, you know, for me, I'm like, man, you know, Robert Freeman just seems like a perfect guy, right, to take a shot on. I honestly, and maybe Mike Bainbridge, maybe he did draft him in a draft, but I don't know if anybody else has drafted him, but I love Robert Freeman. So I think people should absolutely be taking shots on him. I'll go as high as, I don't know. I mean, I guess we need some news, but I'm willing to go as high as 15th round at this point and, you know, just take some shots there. Why not? He's this, we know what this role does.
I mean, Micah Davis, man, he's being drafted in ADP in the 17th round, wide receiver 77. Like, why not replace Freeman with that? And again, I'm guilty. Yeah. I was drafting Micah Davis as the wide receiver two there. Cause again, I know Blake Anderson values experience. And I wasn't aware that they had a guy like Robert Freeman on this roster that seemed ready to go take over. So I was kind of hoping that they would might move over Micah Davis to the slot role. And have your two most experienced guys, like either Jalen Royals moves to the slot, keep Micah Davis on the outside. Those are your top two guys, or vice versa. But again, clearly, based on the quotes from Blake Anderson, like Robert Freeman's going to be a dude for this offense. The only thing that I'm slightly scared about is we have another DT Sheffield situation. Yeah. There was nothing but praise, nothing but talk about how great he was going to be. And then just all of a sudden, everything goes out the window the moment that the season starts. And again, not saying that Freeman's going to be in the transfer portal again by week three or anything like that, but still, like,
right,
all signs point to him being great. And then just nothing happens. But
yeah,
I don't think you can base anything off of that situation. That was kind of a really crazy fluke situation. You agree with me, Josh?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, yeah, Robert Freeman, he could not hit. And that's why I wouldn't go until he moves up the depth chart, right? Or we start hearing in scrimmages he's doing something. Like, you can't go crazy, right? And start drafting him in like the top 10 rounds. But, you know, like, let this thing play out the way that it should. And, like, look, if he's hitting, then I don't think he's not going to be the wide receiver one. So you still need to temper some expectations on what he can do. But he's going to have, at best ball, he's a great candidate because he's going to have some boom weeks. So I think, you know, as long as you can keep him fit 10 to 15 round range, I think you're good to draft him, as long as we're getting good reports.
All righty. I think that's a good place to kind of bring the episode to a close here. Josh, it has been fantastic having you on here today. We talked about your new podcast. We talked about some of the work you guys are doing at Fantasy Points. But what are you guys got coming up, right? You got, again, like I said, the podcast. Some of your tools and stuff like that. Or not tools. The write-ups that you guys are planning on doing kind of later down the line. But what else do you guys plan on doing?
Yeah, so I haven't put this out anywhere yet, so this is a first, but we just released our projections for the year, so our season-long projections. So we have those up on the site. We just have ADP that we put up there that's free to everyone. We want to get people involved in CFF, kind of grow this space, and I think it's intimidating when you look at 134 teams or whatever it is now. And
for sure.
So we want to make it easier for people to be able to dive into this that maybe wouldn't normally. So we're putting some free ADP out there for everybody. And then we'll have rankings up like you guys at the end of the month is when we're aiming to do that as well. And we have an early bird special that's 20% off. So it's usually going to be $150 for a subscription, but right now it's $120 through the end of the month. So this would be the time to hop on if you're going to do it.
All right. Again, like I mentioned at the start of the show, just an incredibly smart crew over there between Josh, Eric, Mike, and Zach. They are absolutely guys that you need to listen to in addition to what we do here on this podcast and at campuskent.com. These guys have been doing, quite frankly, longer than I've been doing it, and they have a ton of experience bringing into this, so absolutely worth listening to anything they have to say over there. In terms of what we got going on over here at campuskent.com and CTN, I already mentioned we got our CFF rankings coming out here at the end of the month. We'll have those up pretty much, I would hope, within the next week here. So if there's no other issues there, way down the line, we got obviously our CFF guide. We always aim for the 4th of July weekend there. Incredible stuff. The best place to have as much consolidated information about all 134 teams going into the season. So be on the lookout for that and announcements regarding that. And in terms of what we got going on here at CTN, again, next month, Nate and I are discussing freshmen when it comes to Dynasty CFF. So check out that episode of Defending the Natty. And then spring games it feels like they get pushed later and later. I feel like we got a ton of them starting April 13th, but don't really have a ton to discuss over the next 2 weeks. We'll touch on them just like we did here in terms of like we do with the spring camps for the ones that are there, because we got like SMU on the 5th, we got UAB on the 6th, Clemson on the 6th, Auburn on the 6th. So some to discuss, but we'll also have some miscellaneous topics thrown in there. And then really the second half of April is when we're going to really be diving into a lot of these spring game reactions and stuff like that. So be on the lookout for all of that. Well, with all that, we've come to the end of our show. Thank you guys for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show and leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out all the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys next week as we discuss more of this spring news and some other miscellaneous topics. So until then, really appreciate you guys and hope you have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.